Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk. With me today are Austin Bay and Jim Dunnigan. Austin is an author, columnist, blogger, and contributor to StrategyPage.com. Jim is a military analyst, consultant for the U.S. military, and well-known author. On Strategy Talk, we discuss current events with our own unique twist. We report news as history. Welcome, Jim and Austin. A lot's been happening over the last couple of weeks since we've talked. The biggest thing, maybe not the biggest thing, but the thing that actually was rather spooky to me was the North Korean conflict. I'm sure you were probably in that area back in the early 60s, right, Jim?
Yeah. We were down at by Incheon, which is where the refugees from the island landed.
Right.
We were within artillery range of North Korea, let me put it that way. Both the long range, the same guns that they had aimed at the island.
They could probably still be the same
ones on the DMZ could hit us.
Right.
So I know the feeling, let me put it that way.
Are they hungry? I mean, are they trying to get food out of us again or out of the South Koreans or, you know, it's just a move to try to get us to move on some of the negotiations with them?
To put it bluntly, the people who run the country are a bunch of ideological thugs, and they've been using extortion, bullies, basically. They found for a long time that they could bully South Korea into sending them free food, free oil, free all sorts of free aid. But 2 years ago, there was a swing in the in the attitudes in South Korea. They realized over a decade of this soft policy wasn't producing any results. The North Koreans, in the meantime, had developed more long-range ballistic missiles and tested a nuclear weapon. Not too successfully, but, you know, they had tested one. So the South Koreans elected a more conservative president. He proceeded to cut the North Koreans off. Now, North Koreans have never been known to be easy to negotiate with. When I was over there, they were still arguing over the size of the table in the negotiating room up on the DMZ. You know, they had made, the Chinese had forced them to agree to a ceasefire in 1953. But even while I was there in the early 60s, they were still arguing over the size of the table in the negotiating room. And they haven't stopped. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But it's typical bully tactics. You know, I see a lot of it down on Wall Street. You know, you got to be careful who you get into an argument with, because there are cultural North Koreans down there, and we probably all run into them. Just obnoxious people who will not stop. You know, you just don't want to deal with them. But in this case, the South Koreans have no choice. They're the neighbors, and the North Koreans. Last March, they sank a South Korean corvette, a warship, killed 46 sailors, denied it. We know nothing, but of course they found components of a North Korean torpedo. They, you know, like an aircraft crash, they recovered the sunken ship and any other bits and pieces they could find on the bottom. It was in the shallow coastal water, and they positively identified the weapon, shall we say. And now this time, of course, there was no denying it. The North Koreans say they were forced to because the South Koreans and the Americans would not stop holding military exercises on South Korean territory or in international waters. The North Koreans found this intolerable. Now, they've been saying that for decades. And, you know, nobody's been paying any attention to them. But, you know, they killed four people, wounded about 30. And the South Koreans fired back, without much effect. And the North Koreans are saying they're the victims. But what's more important is what's being said in South Korea. As the North Koreans found 2 years ago, public opinion had shifted against them. Well, it shifted even more against them. South Koreans are basically outraged. I mean, people in the street, I'm told, are saying, hey, we've been giving these guys free food. They're starving. We're feeding them. We're sending them fuel oil, and they kill us?
Right.
So you know how that goes, right? You don't have to be from Utah to catch that. Even people in New York would understand, you know, that attitude. So there's a lot of anger. what was interesting was about the same time the WikiLeaks released some cables, diplomatic cables, relating to North Korea, China, the United States. And what was interesting, now, as I pointed out with the WikiLeaks, there's not much coming out in WikiLeaks that we haven't already reported. We just right. inferred, you know, what was actually going on. The WikiLeaks simply proves it. But one of the things it proved was that the Chinese are exasperated, as we've reported for years, with the North Koreans. And their diplomats have come right out and said, you know, if you guys, you know, go, if North Korea goes south, you can have it. Now, that was interesting because that had, nobody had ever wanted to touch that before. Indeed, the Chinese have been making noises. Apparently, they've been making noises to try and calm the North Koreans down, which makes sense. Publicly, China is the traditional ally of North Korea. And in fact, in one of the diplomatic leaked cables, the Chinese diplomat was quoted as saying, you know, when asked, well, why do you support these maniacs? And they say, what can we do? They're our neighbor. And that says a lot, because what they're saying is the obvious. If anything goes south, so to speak, in North Korea, there's going to be a million or more starving refugees pouring into China. Because that's the easiest place to cross. Between North and South Korea, there's the demilitarized zone full of hundreds of thousands of landmines. So even if you left them and said, hey, you can go to South Korea, you can't get there. I mean, there is one road through the truce village, you know, where they have the negotiation and they sign the ceasefire. There's that one road there, but that can easily be blocked. But the Yalu River, which separates China from North Korea, is, well, at least in warm weather, you can basically swim across it, or in the wintertime, you can just walk across it on the ice. It's not a wide river, and there are a number of bridges. But the Chinese realized they wouldn't be able to stop, you know, the people trying to get out, because the food system would completely break down if the government collapsed. In fact, that would probably be the cause of the government collapsing, because the food system is collapsing. The North Koreans, in their fever dreams, have basically thrown out all the international food aid organizations that were bringing in the free food. And then from the South Korean free food, and the Chinese will only send in limited free food. So they have basically been starving for the last year and a half, bit by bit. It's estimated that 20% of the population is undernourished. Because of the starvation in the 90s, the latest generation of draftees, you're drafted for 6 years into the North Korean army, about age 18 or 19. But for the last few years, pictures have been coming back of North Korean soldiers. They're like 6 inches shorter than South Korean soldiers. I mean, it's really noticeable. It's embarrassing, as many South Koreans tell me. But they're still in charge. And their way of staying in charge is to bully the neighbors and terrorize their own citizens. So there you have it in a nutshell.
Now, you wrote an article a couple of weeks ago right after this happened, Austin. What do you have to add to what Jim's talked about?
Oh, Jim's got the situation to... describes it really very, very well. I mean, what I would add to it is that policy, well, just the name of the policy, the sun has set on South Korea's sunshine policy, which was the rewards policy. We're going to make nice with the North. And as Jim said, that really began to end 3 years ago. To some degree, the example of the North Korean regime's cynicism, one of the free trade zones and actually an industrial zone that South Korea funded and built in North Korea. The North Koreans now use its operation as another pressure point to the regime's. You're giving us this, but you haven't given us enough, and it's not enough money to support the grandiose lifestyles, and I repeat, grandiose lifestyles, that Kim Jong-il, his family, and his political elites, and according to strategypage.com, I know this is Jim's insight into this, also the military elites. They're elite units that do well in North Korea. They remain loyal to the Kim regime because they eat while you know, at various times, there are at least 2 to 3 million people going hungry. Whether they're starving, well, a couple of years ago there was starvation, and that was evident, and that was documented. The Chinese were among the folks that recognized that starvation occurring in North Korea. So, look, their North Korean regime is dangerous to South Korea. It's dangerous to China, just as Jim pointed out. By the way, and this is secondhand because I was reading it through one of the newspapers that got the WikiLeaks dump. But according to one of the newspapers, the WikiLeaks dump quoted a Chinese, I believe it was a spokesman from the individual in the foreign ministry, saying that China had said they can handle 300,000 North Korean refugees in a crisis. But any more than that would stress their system, and they would have to militarize. Well, the border's already militarized, but send significant forces there to seal the border so that they didn't deal with a greater flood of North Korean refugees should the regime collapse. Now, that's pretty hard, cold statistics. I don't know what all the material that went into the analysis, but that has the ring of, hey, we've actually looked at this. And as Jim said a moment ago, how many refugees would you have out of North Korea? Jim said 1 million. You might have 5 million people running north and another 5 headed south as the regime collapsed. And as it collapsed, is it going to attack South Korea or throw a bomb at Japan? We don't know. Now, this is not so much adding to what Jim said. I'm just kind of filling in some of the blanks and some of these in my column. I addressed these issues. I noted that there are 4 things we don't really know. And I think we actually, thanks to WikiLeaks, and as Jim alluded to this a moment ago, have had some of our suppositions about the Chinese government's reaction to North Korea confirmed, because of the WikiLeaks statement that the vice foreign minister said that we in Beijing know that the peninsula will eventually be reunified. They'll likely be reunified with Seoul in control. But you still, what is North Korea, if North Korea attacked, launched another attack, what's Beijing going to do? There's also, and when Jim alluded to this, the issue of what is it that we call it in Quick and Dirty Guide to War? It's the strange kingdom, but I mean, it's the world's first hereditary communist dictatorship. They're about to have Kim Jong-il's getting old. He's got a favored son. The favored son may not be favored by other factions within the military, so they've got a looming succession crisis. And then, of course, the other issue is how far are they along with their nuclear weapons program. They, just before the artillery attack, they had shown an international investigator, including an American who was on the team, an entirely new, suspected but not proven nuclear laboratory with, as I recalled, many, I forget the exact number in the article, working centrifuges. So their nuclear program has advanced, and that's their chief extortion weapon. You know, if you know, we're going to attack you, we're militant, we'll sink the Corvette Tianan. Jim mentioned that, and we're going to get away with it because you all know the price of war is just too expensive, and you all being China, South Korea, Japan, the United States, and even Russia, it's just too expensive. Well, Jim gave you the view of the South Koreans in the street now, and I mean, since I wrote that column, I've read several articles from in the English language South Korean websites. Just saying exactly what Jim said. People of South Korea are fed up with it. And by the way, Dan, in October, I think it was the first week of October, a food supply ship sailed from South Korea to North Korea, and with a bunch of emergency food supplies because of I think one of them was from a UN office and another one was an NGO saying there is a very good possibility of starvation during this winter in North Korea in the south, despite losing a warship in March. And October said, okay, we're going to send you some food. They do that, and then they get shelled and have two civilians killed and two South Korean Marines killed on that island west of the peninsula. The South Koreans are fed up with it. Interestingly enough, the United States, which, and it hadn't mattered, I pointed this out in that article, whether it's a Democratic or Republican administration, we've still played at some level the same game, which is North Koreans act up, but because of the regional threat and the threat to the global economy, and honestly, Shanghai, Beijing, Seoul, and Tokyo are some of the most economically productive places on the entire planet. We all know that, and it matters what happens economically in Seoul, South Korea. It matters in New York and London, and heck, even in Utah, Dan. It matters what goes on in Seoul. So we end up giving them goodies, but it looks like the Obama administration, realizing that our South Korean ally has reached that point, has at least rhetorically said, we're not going to play this game anymore. You're not going to get anything. The Japanese are there. The Japanese always get the Chinese attention by suggesting maybe they're going to rearm, and heaven forbid, they might go and get a nuke. Well, the Japanese did not say that in public, but that's the way the Chinese read all these machinations when the Japanese say maybe we need to develop some improved offensive weapons so that we can take out North Korean ballistic missiles on the pad before they're fired at Tokyo.
Right.
Now, you've reached a point. We need to revisit this in 6 months and see if the "okay, we're fed up with it" attitude that Jim described, that the South Koreans have said, "Hey, this is it," and the other dimension of the Chinese. I read this morning on the web that a Chinese spokesman had said in public, "Well, yes, we understand that, you know, and are vexed by the North Korean regime," not exactly saying what the WikiLeaks leak attributed to the foreign ministry, but damn close. I mean, close enough for diplomatic work, let's put it. And what does North Korea do? Are they going to attack? Are they going to destroy Seoul? They're going to get destroyed in the process. They're going to hurt everybody else. But it's going to be an interesting and dangerous, I think, 6 months to watching and see how South Korea and the United States and Japan, we're not paying for anything anymore. And see how that goes.
Right. You know, speaking of the WikiLeaks thing, Jim, I, like you, as I read through it, I go, okay, we got that right, we got that right, we got that right. And I'm sitting there going, does this surprise anybody, any of the stuff that's being dumped?
No, you got to remember that what WikiLeaks does, and it does do damage, is that diplomacy, as the diplomats describe their job, is lying for their country. In other words, the way the media game, you know, the airprint battlefield, as it were, works, is you cannot say certain things. Otherwise, the media and your political opponents will jump on you. I mean, that's why the Chinese admitted, you know, diplomat to diplomat, that they supported South Korea taking over the whole peninsula. But they could not say that to North Korea, because the North Koreans would then get all bent out of shape and become more difficult to control. The North Koreans give the Chinese a hard time, and they're the last allies they have. I mean, we reported, I think it was 2 years ago, as the Chinese were sending aid in on trains, and at one point the North Koreans decided, well, let's just keep the trains. Send the crews back. Aren't we generous? And so the Chinese had to make a stink about it, say, hey, look, no more trains are coming south unless we get our trains back. Okay, sorry, misunderstanding. So these guys require special handling. We all know, we all have people in our lives who require special handling. So it's as if all the confidential discussions you've had in your own family.
Right.
About Uncle Jim or whatever, you know, being this or being that. They were made public. Everybody knew. There would be consequences.
Right.
And it's the same in the world of diplomacy, except the consequences are sometimes more expensive or more deadly than they are in family situations.
Yeah.
And that's basically the problem. And what it also means, of course, is America loses face because this was stupidity. I mean, what a lot of people, what hasn't been raised is how did this happen? It happened very simply. The president ordered that all the different branches of government shared their intelligence as much as possible. There was a presidential directive. And the State Department offered to put their secret, not their top secret, but their secret cables available on SIPRI, the Defense Department secret network. Now, they had every reason to believe that it was secure because very few secrets get off SIPRI, but people got sloppy. You had a PFC who had basically more access than he was authorized to, given his clearance level. They are now shutting down all the writable DVD drives on the computers connected to SIPRI. That wasn't the case when Manning last year, that's when he did it. And he had to use a subterfuge. You weren't supposed to carry, you know, rewritable CDs into a secure area, but he hooked up rewritable disc as a Lady Gaga disc, and that was able to get in. He just get in there, he erased the Lady Gaga, you know, tracks, and just copy stuff off the SIPRI net, and that's how it happened. All it took was one, you know, megalomaniac PFC, and there are more than a few of those in the Army. There always have been. And the damage was done. And America looks like a fool because basically we couldn't control or we couldn't keep our word. We
right.
couldn't keep secrets. So, you know, the diplomats, American diplomats are going to get razzed for that. They're going to take the heat. Department of Defense just shrugs it off. Said, hey, you know, stuff happens. But it does have consequences. And it could happen again.
Right. Now, Austin, in my mind, the people that immediately could get hurt from the WikiLeaks things are the sources of some of the information that was revealed in the cables, such as the NGOs acting as sources, sources within the government, something like that, that could have retaliation against them.
Well, look, that's
can I jump in? Apparently, they didn't release cables. They haven't released all the cables.
Okay.
And apparently, Assange, you know, the guy with WikiLeaks, he apparently has legal counsel. And they told him, if you give them a smoking gun, in other words, a dead body, if they can trace somebody getting whacked because you released a name, you can be prosecuted. That's murder.
Mm-hmm.
Accessory. And you don't need a lawyer to tell you that. I just have to watch a lot of television, which
right.
a lot of people do out there who vote. So they've actually been quite careful. They haven't released all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And even the first wave, you know, the newspapers noted we didn't get them all. And we were told it's our responsibility to determine whether or not what we release in our country is within the bounds of local law. So they've been very cagey about this. So, for example, the first wave, you know, the ones from Afghanistan and Iraq, there were no bodies.
Right.
There could have been, but there weren't. So we can be grateful for that in a way. But Manning is still going down for life. I don't think he's got nothing to plead with, you know, so just bye-bye, Mr. Manning.
Right.
His 4-year enlistment.
Dan, do you want me to take a shot, though, at the
yeah, at the premise.
Individual threat? I mean, that's really
yeah.
what your question was.
Right.
Oh, sure. This opens, look, first of all, and this is already occurring, Foreign Service officers who are representatives of the United States, a lot of their job, and I'm going to be sound a little bit facetious here, or cheeky. But the thing is a lot of their job is to gossip. That's what goes on. Is to gossip. A lot of their job is to curry favor. Well, if I could use the word gossip because I've seen that. Oh, it was all a bunch of gossip. What they do, and this is part of a diplomat's job, and it's actually can be very. It takes a long time and a lot of presence and a lot of presence being in a place and a lot of work to understand what the conversation, what gossip is significant. And it's important. Is it gathering intelligence? It's intelligence of a type. It's political intelligence that you get from foreign countries' diplomats, foreign country citizens who speak to you, foreign country companies or non-governmental organizations and the like. And what the diplomat needs, and it doesn't appeal to the utopian notion of somebody like the WikiLeaks group and Julian Assange that all this transparency, well, you know, it's going to solve issues. No, that's not true. Yeah, it's not true because the diplomat, if he's doing his job, is trying to, yes, advance U.S. policy, but also resolve issues and talking to people and providing them a high degree of they're saying, I'm going to pass this on, you know that, to my superiors. But you're not going to get hung for talking to me and telling me what your opinion is. And even if the person is trying to con you, you collect that information and you put it in a cable, or you send it to if you don't put it in a cable to the Secretary of State, it doesn't go to her, but it goes to one of the desks or working sections of the State Department. And the State Department sits there and says, okay, this is information from one of our foreign service officers. We know who said this. This may or may not be useful, but still there is there's a personal relationship that the foreign service officer may have spent a decade or two decades developing and doing his or her job, but at the same time in the pursuit not just necessarily forwarding a specific policy, but in gaining information so that better decisions can be made. That's what goes on. Now, that's already been heavily compromised by WikiLeaks. In many cases, we don't even know who the Foreign Service officers are. A good intelligence analyst can come back and likely figure it out if they want to, but the deal is you've lost channels, or they're going to be closed for a while until there's confidence once again on the part of the contacts of the Foreign Service officer that they can talk to him without having their private conversations delivered to the rest of the world. Now, that's the day-to-day diplomacy that's been damaged. What you ask, though, are any of these people ultimately at risk? And the answer is, of course they are. Because some of the information, I haven't seen it, and whatnot, it's voluminous, but it'll be sifted through, and there may be, even if there's just three or four tracks through there that go into really sophisticated intelligence operations, or lead to a criminal syndicate or whatever, somebody with a vengeful attitude is going to respond, could respond. And there, an American diplomat in the pursuit of his job becomes a target. Now, I know there are already targets for Al-Qaeda. We all know that, but I'm talking about a target from someone you didn't expect and it didn't need to happen.
Right.
And so it's potential. I can't tell you exactly. The thing is, though, is the State Department security people, I am certain about this, are going through as much of it as they can with it in mind. Do we have, which of our personnel may be more at risk? And there may be, take this down further, they maybe decide to pull back some diplomats from certain posting, because they don't want them. They don't want to risk up the risk that they face on a daily basis. Does that overall damage U.S. diplomacy? It does incrementally, but you get an expert, somebody that you've spent with the U.S. Taxpayers spent 25 years training and getting the experience, And I'm just picked this up as an example, because it's actually probably a good example. Let's say Turkey. It's taken a long time to get create a foreign service officer who's an expert in Turkey, and he's served in the embassy in Turkey. And because of some discussion, and I'm making this up, that involved the Kurdistan Workers Party, PKK, which we write about on strategy page all the time. They've been at war with the Kurds have been at war in the southeast with everybody for millennia, but since the 1980s with Turkey, the PKK is a separatist outfit. Because of something that was revealed in WikiLeaks, now the PKK commander decides, I want that guy out of the way. It may also reveal a Turkish source that makes a Turkish somebody from Turkey, because of the passing the information on the U.S., a target for assassination.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I picked on Turkey was that there are a lot of the cables apparently that have been released do address issues in Turkey, and several of them, one of them, and I read this in the Wall Street Journal just this morning, essentially accuses the current Turkish prime minister of being crooked and having secret bank accounts with slush funds hiding money, extortion, bribery, et cetera. And he's indignant about it. He flat out issued the Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan said, I do not. I challenge anybody to show that I do. And, I mean, that's straight challenge to CIA, MI6, FRS, anybody on the planet to say I do. And he's considering civil action against the diplomat that made the statement. Now, that was a private conversation reported on by the diplomat. Now, I don't know whether the Prime Minister of Turkey will actually follow through with that threat. But the fact is, let's say that he's telling us the truth, and he does not have those secret bank accounts. And he's honest, and he doesn't have it. He's got the basis of a case there, and don't tell me that doesn't damage U.S.-Turkish relations, where the Prime Minister is suing a former Foreign Service officer who served in Ankara. Now, I moved from reality, because the cable was sent to a hypothetical, but there you have step back. We don't have the evidence, but give the Prime Minister his due.
Yeah.
He's got the right to defend his name, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And it should never have come out, because odds are the Foreign Service officer or whoever sent that cable was just reporting on something a Turkish source, who's probably, let's say, I'm making this up, it wasn't concluded in the article, but a political opponent of the Prime Minister, told the State Department guy. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was gossip, but it has extremely deleterious effects.
Right. And I think the biggest damage from this whole thing is what is going to be the psychological reaction from all the different departments and our allies, is that we're all going to go back into a silo mentality, that, you know, State Department will stop sharing, the other departments will stop sharing, even if there is a mandate out there for them to do it, and our allies are going to be very reluctant to share anything, which is going to perhaps compromise some of our terrorism intelligence.
Well, yes and no. What's been gotten out there so far? I mean, we've had almost a week of the initial reaction and then the reaction. I've heard some diplomats tell me that, or some people in the State Department, that it's been useful. Because a lot of things that the United States would like to have been said out loud are now out loud. Without us, the United States was guilty of, we were snookered. That makes everybody happy. Everybody likes to see the giant stumble. But at the same time, it proved the service. For example, there have been a lot of rumors about the current Turkish government, a very self-righteous pro-Islamic and anti-corruption government, getting dirty. Not being dirty, but getting dirty. The temptation is always there. And I suspect where there's smoke, there's fire. The business with the Chinese and North Korea. The Chinese said in one of the released cables, you know, when asked, why don't you publicly criticize North Korea, said, well, they're our neighbors. I mean, the Chinese are diplomatic. They've been doing it for thousands of years. But now it's out there, and the North Koreans are not happy. Although they've been, I'm sure they've been chewed, Kim Jong-il has been chewed out, you know, rather vigorously in private. It's always been understood that this would never be public. But there, those barbarian Americans can't even hold their secrets. But oh my God, the world knows that we think you North Koreans are a bunch of dangerous maniacs. I'm
but
so sorry.
We knew
sorry.
That. Jim, we all knew that they thought.
I know, but the world knows, and the North Koreans know the world knows. I mean, they're living the hermit kingdom. You know, we can thank Google Earth for showing us pictures of these luxuries. It looks like pictures, aerial pictures of Hollywood. You know, Beverly Hills. Swimming pools. Beautifully tended, gardens. This is where the elite of North Korea live. You can also see Google Earth pictures of ramshackle villages where people are starving. I mean, these guys are living in illusion. And now the facade has been torn away.
Yeah.
Same thing with Iran and the Arabs. We've been reporting for years that the Arabs have been saying to the Israelis and the Americans, kill the goddamn Iranians for us because they're going to take all our oil. Now it's out there in the cables. That's exactly what they've been saying. Now, it's embarrassing to the Arabs. Arabs have told me, I've castigated Arab people I know downtown. I says, what is this crap with Bahrain and Qatar buying all these weapons and then talking nice to the Iranians? I says, and the guy looks at me and says, well, what would you do? You have no idea how afraid, the Gulf Arabs are of the Iranians. I said, all right, point well taken.
With good reason. I mean, they've got good reason because of the way that Quds Force or the like are going to attack them. And the Emir of Bahrain, he's one of the guys directly quoted as saying, we know who the trouble is,
now the Iranians know how much the Arabs hate them. Now, this is important, because the Iranians have always looked down, I mean, really looked down, capital L, capital D, on the Arabs. Americans, we talk about racism, but you really got to go to other parts of the world to see real racism, with a capital R.
Right.
The Iranians despise the Arabs. And the Arabs are, and because the Iranians have always been top dogs militarily, it was a quirk, when the Islamic armies conquered them in the 8th century, they were in the middle of a civil war, they were in a mess, et cetera, et cetera. They never really recovered from that psychologically. But they still despise the Arabs. And they always assume the Arabs are kissing their ass because that's the natural order of things. But now they see these guys saying, my God, they don't like us.
Hey,
how hard? What have we done wrong?
Dan, let me put another frame on this. And I gave you the downside of it. And Jim's point, and this has been discussed in a bunch of blogs and even showed up in mainstream news outlets about, the upside is, the Chinese have said that, that is an upside. There's also a risk, too, back there, even though, As you, everyone who reads Strategy Page knows, Austin Bay thinks the North Koreans are ultimately going to pull the trigger, and we better get ready for that. I do think that. So whatever's going to set them off is going to set them off. But the tissue thin, or maybe it is a delusion. Jim suggested that they thought the Chinese were going to back them up forever. That's gone, and we may have this interim period. We do have. I shouldn't say may. I told you let's wait 6 months and see how it plays out. But the fact is that the Chinese had been telling us for years, in some places, not just under the table, but, about we know these guys are dangerous. And they've been actually telling the North Koreans, if the North Koreans would just look at it in terms of what really counts, money and trade, South Korea is far more important to Beijing than North Korea.
Classic example of this doublespeak. The Chinese have been denouncing, have been going, to the North Koreans, they say, denounce South Korea. And in the last 10 years, what's happened? North, South Korea and China have become major league trading partners.
It's huge. They have such huge common interests. All right. That said, there's a, and I'm paraphrasing, I believe Secretary of Defense Gates said this on Monday. And his view on WikiLeaks, and I you know, in the context of what of reading what he said, it has all of these downsides that we have discussed, and that I went into some detailed explaining what had happened, you know, and then what could happen. But he said, you have to remember, and this is a very mature, accurate, historically proven understanding of international relations. He says, you must remember that nations deal with us because it is in their interest to deal with the United States. And those interests have not gone away. Despite what Assange has done and the damage that he's wrought and the like, the truth is that it's after you get through the anger period and the like, mature adult leaders sit around and say, hey, we still need each other. China has basically said, you know, South Korea and the United States are far more important to China than North Korea. We already knew that. It is pleasant, as Jim said, that I'm sure that some of the people in the State Department are said, okay, we've been covering for these guys. We don't have to cover for them anymore. You know, it's now out there, and they're fessing up to it. We know that the Saudis, not just the Saudis, but the Iraqis and all the little Gulf Emirates, the Emiratis, as a classic example, the United Arab Emirates, all know Iran is the big threat, and that their defense is oriented to dealing with the Iranian threat. The Iranians know that. There is this silver lining to the damage that Assange and WikiLeaks have wrought to diplomacy, which is, guess what? In common interests are revealed. And that, Jim, that's really what you were getting at, or what your State Department sources were, right?
Isn't
that one of them?
Yeah.
They're out there. But just to give our strategy page a plug, as Dunnigan said when we started off, actually, we've been recording on this ever since we went online in 1999, you know?
Right. You didn't need WikiLeaks for a lot of this. You could have just been the strategy page.
Sure. You just didn't have it pointed down with people's names on it. And there's a downside to that, and I think I described it fairly well for what
right.
it does to a profession. You know?
Yeah. Well,
that hurts. It really does hurt, man.
I think the other thing is this reaction to the leaks of, you know, there's some people that just don't want to see how the sausage is made. And, you know, some of the stuff that looks like it's happened is people have wanted to keep their eyes closed. That, you know, diplomacy is a, like you said, it's diplomats lying to diplomats.
Well, no, but it's gossip. It's not all lying. It's,
right.
A lot of it is, and what a lot of the WikiLeaks stuff that I have read, it is gossip. It's gossip.
Well, they lie in public.
Right.
They speak, they're lying in public.
That's right.
Right.
That's
yeah.
right. That, well, Jim, you're right. But the thing is that it's, they're collecting gossip, but that's their job, and there's a reason that they do it.
Right.
So, you know.
Well, we've gone over time, and it's time to wrap it up. Fun. I'm sure we could talk about both North Korea and WikiLeaks for hours. So.
Well, let's go back to North Korea in about 6 months and
yep.
revisit it. I'm sure they're still on
North Korea.
Right. I'm sure they'll give us reason to come back.
Yeah, of course.
Well,
all right.
We'll
talk to you guys.
Right. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.